Most campgrounds look great online. They look great on the listings. There may have even really good reviews, but some RVers learn the hard way over the years that there are little red flags that tell you, hey, maybe you should reconsider staying here. Have you ever pulled into a campground and thought, oh no, this episode's for you. This is RV Miles. Welcome to episode number 395 of the RV Miles podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Abby. And we are two RVers who, along with our boys, have been crisscrossing all over North America on one epic road trip since 2016. Here at RV Miles, we talk all things RV and outdoors, from industry news to campground red flags, travel destinations, our national parks, so much more.
We'll get into our main topic in a minute, but we've just returned from the Kansas City RV show. We'll talk about that in a little bit too in our Fresh Tank Black Tank segment, which has returned. This is a full episode of the podcast, and we'll get into all that stuff a little bit later. But I wanted to kick off the show here talking a little bit about something that's come up in the last couple of videos. So actually, the last podcast episode we put out, we were talking about our favorite fuel stops, truck stops, gas stations, what have you.
Boy, did people have a lot of opinions.
A lot of opinions.
As I knew they would. It's a very personal thing.
Shout out to the family that took our daughter to Quick Star for her birthday.
Yeah, we're going. So we're going. Thanks for the recommendation.
But one of the comments on that episode, I actually talked about this comment on the comments video that I just put out yesterday, was about how some of the big truck stops like Love's, Pilot, Flying J don't use top tier gasoline. So I brought that comment up in that comments video, and it's now requiring some additional discussion. Okay. Because there is a lot of talk in the comments of the comment video about the comment of top tier gasoline. So
you've already lost me.
So there are a lot of people here say, so top tier is it's a label that you'll see on some gas pumps. It's a little sticker. It says top tier fuel. And what it is it's a consortium of brands that have signed up to be a part of this program that certifies that their fuel meets certain standards. It's essentially the additives and detergents that go into the fuel. And where this comes from is not the gasoline makers, right? It's not the oil companies. So this is where a lot of the comments come in, because there are people that feel that it's just a marketing tactic, and it's in a marketing association similar to like Got Milk and the dairy farmers, right? It's not. So what top tier is a program that was created by the automobile manufacturers back in the early 2000s. And the reason they created this program is because they felt like they wanted to have fewer warranty claims, and they wanted to go into their manuals and recommend that you buy top tier fuel, a fuel that meets the standards that they think are necessary for their engines to last longer, because there's a lot of cut rate fuel out there. So a lot of arguments in the comments about different ways that fuel is formed, and essentially it's all coming from the same tanks, and then the additives are added in at when the truck fills up to bring that fuel to a station, which is all true. But that top tier additive package that these fuel brands have to meet does mean something, and it doesn't really cost more. So back in 2016, AAA did a study on this, and what they did is they took six different fuel samples from the same metropolitan area in Texas, from six different fuel stations, three of them being top tier fuel, three of them not being top tier labeled fuel, all premium fuel. So premium fuel also usually has a higher additive package than your regular or mid-grade gasoline. So they took premium fuel that was labeled top tier, three brands and three that weren't. It was random. They had selected like 12 brands, and they randomized it to pick the six. And they did a study. They ran engines for 100 hours on this fuel. And what they found was that the non-top tier fuel had 19 times more carbon deposits on the valves of the engines that they tested. 19 times. And they have photos in the study. I'll link to the study in the description, because it is very thorough. They talk about all the methodology. They talk about a lot of stuff. They also try to find out, is top tier fuel more expensive? And turns out on average over the course of the year, they found it was 3 cents a gallon more expensive in their study. And some other studies, they didn't test this, but some other studies say that top tier fuel will give you slightly, very slightly 2% better fuel mileage. So really that washes out. So when people are saying that it's a marketing scheme, you're just paying for more expensive fuel. It's not necessarily the case. It's not necessarily going to cost you more. I do think it is important if you have a gasoline vehicle to use top tier branded fuel.
I think it's really interesting that people get very hung up on words because they hear top tier.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it is our instinct to believe that that is, again, like Got Milk or any of the other, because history has shown that oftentimes we are led down paths.
Yeah.
That we are made to believe things are good for us. I always go back to the Nutella campaign. I think the campaign by Nutella is one of the greatest campaigns ever committed towards families in the history of PR campaigns.
Yeah, because nobody was eating that.
No,
20 years
ago.
And
then they came out and they somehow managed to convince all of us that Nutella was a good start to our kids' day, and that's what we should be giving them for breakfast.
Yeah.
Hook, line, and sinker right here. I thought, well, this is great. Hazelnuts. Look at my kids are going to eat hazelnuts for breakfast.
And sugar.
Number one ingredient is top ingredient is sugar. So I understand, but like you have just very eloquently and lengthily described.
I don't want to sound like a complaint. The comments were mostly very nice.
And
people had some important things to say. There was somebody that works in the fuel industry, and he was like, look, top tier is a thing to consider, but also you have to consider most of the fuel problems I've seen are not related to that at all. And of course, like my particular feeling about a fuel station is the tanks underground probably look as clean and as modern as the station itself is. So if you go fuel up somewhere that looks dilapidated and isn't clean and falling apart, would you trust the gasoline or diesel that is coming from those pumps?
So
I'd be a little cautious.
You're saying that my theory that if the floor is dirty.
Yeah.
Okay. What I find shocking about all of this is that top tier isn't top tier isn't just what everybody.
I was shocked
that blows my mind.
I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but when the gentleman that left the comment last week on that episode, that none of the major truck stop brands use top tier fuel. I was really shocked by that because it's not just like BP and Exxon. It's like there are a lot of small brands that are under the top tier program. Costco's actually the only diesel that is. So diesel, the problem with diesel is that most brands don't take the time to do the top tier certification for diesel. Because
is your Quickstar?
Quickstar, no. The only top tier diesel is Costco, and Costco only sells diesel at very few Costcos. So
I wonder what the decision is by Costco as to who does or doesn't get diesel.
Yeah.
It has to have something to do with like the city they're in, the state they're in. I'm sure there's a Costco, weigh in here. Why can't we have diesel at all your stations?
What's weird is from what I've seen that it's mostly stations on the West Coast that have it. And you would think that like Texas and places like that,
for real,
they would have diesel, but I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go. Maybe one day Costco will hear our cries. They'll put a diesel station in down the street from us.
RV Miles is sponsored by Blue Ox. Chances are you've seen them on the road. That's because Blue Ox designs and manufactures the best towing products in the industry. Just look around. You'll find them on highways and campgrounds and anywhere you find people traveling through the great outdoors. From award-winning tow bars, base plates, and brakes to a full line of weight-distributing hitches, fifth wheel hitches, receiver hitches, and adjustable ball mounts. With Blue Ox, towing doesn't have to be a drag. Visit blueox.com for more information.
More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by RVMattress.com by Brooklyn Bedding. Get a real mattress for your RV instead of the cheap piece of foam that it came with at RVMattress.com by Brooklyn Bedding. They sell real mattresses and all the odd sizes RVs require, like short kings, Olympic queens, and odd bunk sizes, different thicknesses, and more. Their mattresses are toxin-free. They're made in their factory in Arizona and shipped to you vacuum-sealed wherever you are. You just unwrap them and let them expand. They have a 120-night sleep trial, free shipping, and a limited lifetime warranty. But the best part is that the RV Miles community gets 30% off. It's the best deal they ever offer any day of the year with code RVMiles at RVMattress.com/RVMiles. That's RVMattress.com/RVMiles with the code RVMiles at checkout for 30% off.
So today we wanted to talk about red flags when it comes to booking campgrounds. Now, this requires a little bit of an introduction for folks that aren't familiar with what a red flag is and where this term has come up. Obviously, everybody knows what red flag means, but this term has been pretty common in the dating world in recent years.
Yeah, we're not talking about the beach. So, Jay, why don't you, because you defined it so eloquently this morning at the house.
So
why don't you tell us what the red flag
is? A red flag is, you know, you're interested in somebody, you know, they're exciting, you're attracted to them, they're chatting up with you, something like that. But then something comes up that just, you know, gives you a little twinge, a little bell rings that says, hey, this person might not be.
Nibbles at the back of your your head. And you're like, oh, just something's not right.
Might not be somebody I want to get too close to. And it's not necessarily something that is a deal breaker, a no. The idea is that this is something that sends a little signal that, hey, there may be something that you need to investigate a little bit further.
You know, I think for me, a red flag would probably have been someone that thought green bean casserole was top tier in the culinary world.
Well, there are personal things. Like, so there are things that would be personal to you. And then there are things that are a little bit more universal. Like, is mean on the phone to his parents or something like that.
Yeah, or, you know, baby is talking to their, you know, AI on their phone and isn't nice to them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just somebody we recently hung out with who wasn't nice to their AI. You know, maybe it's little things like that. Or, you know, is someone who is to someone's face, you're hanging out with some friends, and they seem to really like those people. And then the minute they walk away, they start bad-mouthing them. And suddenly, you're not quite sure, like, why are you so two-faced all of a sudden?
Sure.
So you don't quite know, like, do you really like me? Or when I walk away, are you going to start bad-mouthing me?
Sometimes it's simple things and things that are fun or silly or just kind of like a little bit off-putting, like somebody that sneezes into their hand instead of their elbow.
Oh, or has no problem asking if they can borrow your toothbrush.
Yeah.
Like, they have no problem, like, having a community toothbrush.
Yeah.
Or, you know, wants to sleep in the clothes that they've been wearing all day. That's a huge red flag. Takes like at least 15 years to break a person from that.
All right. Anyway, I've never wanted to sleep in the clothes I wear all day, just to be clear. Every now and then I'd sleep in the undershirt that I was wearing, like, underneath a sweater.
You tell lies on this podcast, sir. You tell lies.
So the idea here is that we're going to talk about red flags for campgrounds, places that you might be interested in staying, things that you might be a little bit concerned about seeing on an online listing or when you're searching for a campground. These are not necessarily deal breakers. A lot of great campgrounds have some of these things that we're going to talk about. Abby and I came up with different things, so we're going to share them separately. We don't know what each other came up with. Yeah. So let's go ahead and start with your first one.
This is the dating app of campgrounds that we're doing here. So my first red flag for a campground would be campgrounds that charge a fee after two people.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big red flag for me. Why are only two people, like, on your $90 a night campground fee
included?
Included. And how are two or three more people using so much more at the campsite that you need to charge anywhere from $5 to $10 per person.
Sometimes more. We've seen like 15.
Yeah.
It can get really up there.
Yeah. Big, big red flag for me.
Yeah. And again, we've stayed at places that have that. We try not to.
But sometimes the location trumps the two-person fee.
Usually for us, it ends up being sometimes they have a fee for over four people. So we end up having to pay for because we have
sometimes
three kids. Three kids is hard. Dinner reservations are hard.
Sometimes we become a family of four. Oh, wow. Where'd this fifth kid come from? This is fifth family member. This is so weird. We just picked them up on the road. We've never done that. Jack, cut that out.
All right. That's a good one.
I'll own it. All right. What's yours?
My first one is rules that don't pass the vibe check. So if you've got too few rules, you've got too many rules, you don't have any rules listed on your website whatsoever.
rules like packages that could get you kicked out, perhaps.
You know, there are some campground owners that it seems like they're trying to reinvent how campground operations go, or they're trying to run their own kingdom. And sometimes you're just like, hey, can you just be like everybody else?
Just be but cool.
Really, I think the red flag for me is when you read the rules for the campground and they don't have a positive tone. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. a couple pleases in there, a couple, hey, we like to do this, a couple explanations for why we do this, just a few little positive things instead of this.
Like a community vibe. Yeah. Like this is to keep the community, this is for the community. It's not, you know, because we're grumpy.
Yeah.
It's because we want to ensure that everybody's having a good time. And these are the things that we believe will make that.
Right? Yeah. We want rules. Like we want there to be a quiet time. If there's no quiet time and it seems like a party atmosphere, that could be a problem. There should be some rules. And that's why I said too few rules and too many are both a little bit of a red flag to me.
How many pages of rules is too many.
Never more than a page. Okay. We don't need to flip over a page.
That's when you know you're in trouble.
If we're on the internet, if there's like a 2, 3, 4 on the bottom to go to the next
show more.
Like, that's a bit much.
Moving on.
That's a bit much.
All right. Okay. For me, my next one, campgrounds that use the same photo for every campsite.
Oh, yes.
I have massive concerns if you have gone and snapped, and it's only like one picture, and it's not even a very good one. It's at like a super poor angle where you can't even fully see the campsite.
Yeah.
And then they've gone and they've taken that photo, and they've used it for every single campsite. And at some point, I think to myself, why bother?
Yeah.
Why even bother having photos?
And sometimes they'll have like a there won't be any close-up photos on the website. It'll just be like super wide drone shot that shows the whole campground. You're like, you're not showing me much detail here.
No. And the thing is you think at that point, you know, you want to see the campsite.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the same as I get super annoyed with hotels when they use the same stock photos to show you like the bathroom in the king or the queen rooms, or like if they've got certain different types of rooms, but then they just use the same stock photo of the kitchenette or like of the little living space or whatever. Like, seriously, go and show me what these different types of rooms or these different types of campsites look
even
like.
If you're not doing every single site and it's not a select your own site type of situation,
yeah,
we want a variety. And in general, don't trust the campground's website photos anyway. You know, go on to their Google listing and see photos that users have put up.
Recreation.gov.
They do fantastic.
No. I was about to say they're notorious. Some of the smaller ones are notorious, or even sort of like the county parks or like state parks sometimes. I feel like are really notorious for this, where they always will have the photo coming soon image.
Yes, yes.
So you'll get like a splattering of photos in that campground, but it won't be consistent. Like I think when we were trying to book Cape Hatteras, we had that problem where it'd be like a splattering and it didn't really matter because we had Bexy and she's 25 feet, but you just kind of want to see like.
Recreation.gov does a great job offering a system for the different, you know, thousands of campground operators to put in. It comes down to who's taking the photos and uploading them and putting it in.
Drives me nuts when it's only, you know, every other campsite and then you get the photo coming soon and you're like, well, that photo's been coming soon for like 3 years now. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
My next one is if the words community, village, court, or estate are in the name of the campground. Now, this is...
Estate. That's the best one. I love estate. So
the idea here is that generally campgrounds that have those things in their name are going to be aimed at long-term stays, people that are there, and not just seasonal. Generally, there's people that live there, and that's okay. No issue with that in general, but it is something that I am then going to explore because often if it is primarily a residential community, essentially with people living in their RVs, this is not about the quality of the place. It's not about how people take care of the stuff. It's not about like, you know, living in substandard conditions. That's not what I mean at all. Because there are very nice places like this and there are not so nice places like this. What it's about is the attitude of the people that are there and whether they are interested in having vacationers in or around them.
I think it's operated a little differently too.
There's that too, yeah.
It is definitely operated a little bit differently and it's catered more towards their long-term guests.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a vacationer standpoint, it may not have that kind of atmosphere you're looking for with activities every night and stuff like that because it is catered more towards the long-term residents.
Or maybe it does have activities, but those activities feel like something that you are interrupting. Yes. Like they have their very serious pickleball tournament. Yes. They have their very serious euchre club and stuff like that that if you are not part of that as an outsider.
Yeah, you better bounce out of that hot tub on Wednesday nights because book club is coming in. Like, again, just
we've
get out.
At places like that that have been great. It's just something that I'm going to explore a little bit more deeply when I see those things in there and be a little bit more cautious about them.
Yeah.
More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by eTrailer. Ever feel like finding the right RV part is like searching for a needle in a haystack? Enter eTrailer.com. Whether you're puzzled about which product is right for you or how to install it, eTrailer has you covered. Their U.S.-based customer service is available by chat or phone 7 days a week. And with expert Q&As, helpful articles, and tons of reviews and install videos, you'll tackle any RV problem with confidence. eTrailer strives to get their hands on everything they sell, and their website is full of overviews, reviews, buying guides, and tutorials. And it's not just RV parts. It's towing and vehicle accessories, camping supplies, and more. Head to the link in the description to get free shipping on orders over $99.
What's next?
Mine is campgrounds that were clearly former KOAs.
Ah, yes, that they have exited the KOA system. Yes,
and they have
Jellystones as well. We've been to a few of those too that used to be Jellystones.
Now, some have exited the KOA system or the Jellystone system and have come under new ownership and they create a whole new campground. We have, so you know, the ones I'm talking about is where it's very clear that they were a KOA and then you pull in, but they're not a KOA, but everything is still yellow. Everything still looks like a KOA. All the signage is still the same font.
Yeah,
I mean, short of like the workers putting duct tape over their yellow t-shirts, like it's still a KOA.
And that could mean that they just wanted to exit the system and they weren't happy with KOA. But generally, in our experience, it has meant that they are either too cheap to be a part of KOA or KOA or Jellystone have asked them to leave. In fact, some of you remember the campground that we were kicked out of several years ago.
Yes.
Was a former Jellystone.
Yes. And we have a campground here in our area that was a former KOA. And it still looks like it's a KOA. I mean, it is still the same picnic tables and everything else that they had when they were a KOA. All they did was change the name. And so that just to me is a red flag because that feels lazy.
Yeah.
And so, and I can say at least in this case, it's been what, 2-3 years? It still looks the same.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
A super restrictive check-in time. Like say they say you have to arrive between 3 and 5 p.m., something like that.
Yeah, when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter's aligned with Mars.
First of all, that, you know, obviously that can be a challenge if something comes up for you, right? Mm-hmm. On any day. But what that says to me, and that's very specific, but even if you say you have to check in before 6 p.m., something like that, what that says to me is we are way understaffed. We don't have people here to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to want to know that I'm in a place that I'm not going to have problems because nobody's probably going to be there to answer the phone to fix them until the morning.
I mean, I think our experience at that cabin mm-hmm. in Tampa is
a very similar situation.
Excellent example.
Yeah.
Of the, I guess, the woman on the golf cart cleaning lady, very rudely telling us check-in is at 4 and it's 3:50, of not having everything we needed in the cabin for a party of 4, but having no one to reach up at the front desk because it was after 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff like that, I think. And, you know, of course, if it was a campground, I mean, things come up, but they're, you know, I do agree with you when it is so restrictive. Like you must show up after 4 o'clock, but before 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
We all know in the RV world, like just things impossible. Come up. I mean, traffic alone can absolutely derail you. You know, getting out of a camp, you know, the campground a little bit later, trying to get on the road if it's your first day, you know.
You say no late check-ins, which could be fine if check-in ends at 10 o'clock or something like that, or 9 o'clock even, or 8 o'clock. But if you say no late check-ins and your check-in ends at like 6 o'clock or something like that, it's not just that that will be difficult for me if something comes up. It's that you're telling me that you're annoying, that I'm going to have some annoyances with the way this property is operated when I get there.
You're telling me that you're, you could make a diamond. That's what you're telling me. So I guess this will be my bonus.
Yeah, we did write 4 in case we each wrote 4 in case we overlapped it all, but we haven't.
I'm really surprised. Yeah. And I don't think we will because you know what my bonus one was.
No, I don't.
So mine is actually, we have not experienced this, but we received an email from a listener about this. And this is campgrounds that are charging nightly fees and charging for electricity on top of that.
Yeah.
This is a huge red flag for me. Yeah. This is probably like we're not even going to go on our first date. We're not even going to have our first night at the campsite together. So the listener shared with us that they did not give us the name of this campground, but they did say they were in El Paso, Texas, and that they were not made aware of this, that they had no idea.
They didn't even get the flag. The flag was not shown. It was not waved for them.
No.
But they were surprised when they got there by an electric fee, which that's even more ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it's very common to pay for electricity on top of the camping rate if you're monthly.
Monthly, yes.
But for and maybe weekly. But for a nightly fee, for them to be checking the meter nightly and paying and charging you a nightly fee for electricity, that's again, even if your rates are good, I'm going to be like, you're
hard pass.
I don't think so.
I would love to know if anyone else has seen this. We have not seen this in the almost 10 years that we have been on the road. We have only paid for electricity when we were doing monthlies. And that's not always the case with every monthly. Sometimes they just build into the monthly a little bit more and they figure that's going to be the electricity depending on where you are in the country.
And we're not talking about like an extra $15. We're talking about they actually read the meter and yes. give you a rate.
Yes. So they, this couple that messaged us was being charged their nightly fee and then whatever they used in electricity while they were there. So if you have had that happen to you, I would be really curious to see how common this is because this blows my mind. Yeah. This was the biggest red flag for me. Like, I really hope that this is not a trend that catches on because I think there will be a lot of very angry RVers out there.
Okay, my bonus one.
Yeah, what's your bonus? I'm curious.
We've always done it that way, energy.
Oh.
So yeah. This could be, you know, I like we have one. A website that looks like it was, you know, GeoCities or... There, we have a website that is, you know, in that font and with the backgrounds that is from like the late 90s.
Links to MySpace.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say a super modern, clean, awesome website doesn't mean you have means you have a nice place. Bad. That could be just as bad. But you don't have you haven't updated your website in 20 years. You only take reservations over the phone. And you don't even get email confirmation, stuff like that. You pay via PayPal. Things like that are all big red flags to me where
it's... not even PayPal. They're like, we need you to write a check.
Write a check when you arrive. Yeah, I mean, we've gone through this before. We've gone through this before where we have had this experience where you have to call to make a reservation. We've got big, nice places where you have to call and mm-hmm. make a reservation. But we've gone through the experience where you've called and made a reservation and they give you an email confirmation and then you arrive and, oh, lo and behold, whoever, you know, writes the information down in the book when you called to do it, screwed up.
Yeah.
And they're having to scramble to figure out where you go. And
yeah, they don't have a site. They didn't have a site big enough for us.
It's really annoying to have that sort of experience. When in this day and age, we can all use computer programs to have reservations and manage them.
Well, and I think now, well, I don't know. I don't want to say that, but my initial response is the reason, you know, why mistakes like that happen is that maybe the turnover is faster now. They're cycling through more people than maybe they did, you know, 30, 40 years ago when kind of keeping a ledger and being able to, you know, chess pieces and move all.
That's the thing, because what it is there are a lot of campgrounds where you can't pick your own site. You know, mm-hmm. so a lot of private campgrounds, you can't pick your own site.
Right.
You're picking, you know, a premium site, a regular site, a site of a certain length, whatever it might be. But that's all you're in an area maybe. Yeah. That's all the information that you're given that you're going to be in one of those areas. And then what happens, you know, computer systems now do this automatically. But what some campgrounds still do and what happened for a long time was that, you know, every week or so on Monday, somebody's job would be to shuffle all the different registrations and try to fit people in the correct sites so that they can keep as many sites open as possible for additional reservations.
Yeah.
And that's where the problems come. And we used to experience more issues with that than we do now, but there are still campgrounds that do that.
Yeah. So those are some of our red flags if we were to be running a dating app for campgrounds, I guess. We would love to know what some of your red flags are, though. I'm sure there are plenty more out there as we all have different things that we look for when we're looking at campgrounds. So feel free to drop those in the comment section if you're watching this here on YouTube, or you can go over if you're listening to this and you can leave it in the RV Miles Facebook group or come over to YouTube and leave it over there, however you want to do it. But we would really love to know, what are your red flags of a campground? All right, it is time to check the level of our tanks, and that is brought to you by our friends over at Liquefied RV Toilet Treatment, the No BS Toilet Treatment. You can find them at liquefiedrv.com. Okay, Jay, what is in your black tank this week?
It's that time of year. This happens to be a black tank for me pretty much every year around this time of year. It is that time of year. We've obviously been experiencing a lot of extreme cold across the country, cold in places where it doesn't generally get that cold. people dealing with freezing up in their RVs. And unfortunately, this time of year, we see lots and lots of stories about RV fires. I don't generally cover them in the news because there are just so many of them, but there are lots and lots of RV fires this time of year. And there are a lot of culprits. It's not just space heaters. Space heaters are a big culprit. People using multiple space heaters, plugging them into power strips, plugging them into circuits in their RV that have other things on them. I personally feel like the only circuit that I'll plug a space heater in our RV is the one that's for the washer and dryer in our bedroom. But we don't even do that. I mean, we've got an electric fireplace, and that's great for us. But if you are using a space heater, try to be very, very safe with it. But understand that sustained power loads over time, especially if you're on 30 amp, can really be taxing on a lot of the connections in your RV, and you can find burn up power ports and outlets and all sorts of stuff. And that's a big cause of fire. But another big cause of fire that we see this time every year is people doing dumb things to try to thaw their pipes. Often it'll be they take a heat gun and they prop it pointing at their sewer pipe on the ground and they walk away from it. We saw a story last year or the year before, somebody had took the
Blackstone
griddle and they took the griddle top off of it and put the whole thing underneath their black tank to try to thaw their black tank with flames. And that kind of stuff is going to get you a burnt down RV.
And I know we get desperate times, call for desperate measures, but what's even more desperate is when everything goes up in smoke right in front of your eyes and there's nothing you can do about it.
And you burn down the RV next to you, or you burn all the other RVs in storage down, whatever it might be. And,
you know, heaven forbid that you not only burn your RV down, but then there's loss of life.
And that's, you know, something we definitely see a lot of.
Right. And so, yeah, you're right. This is this time of year. And I've seen a lot of articles going around social media right now too, reminding people about the importance of safety when it comes to electric heaters and how we're using our heat this time of year. And then also making sure that you have fire extinguishers in your RV.
I know it stinks to spend the money on the propane. I know the propane costs a lot. I know a lot of people can't afford it. But the propane heat is the appropriate way to heat your RV in the winter. You do not want to be just filling it with space heaters. A, that's dangerous, but B, you're not protecting any of your water lines that way, because if you have a heated underbelly, as most RVs do now, that heat only comes from the propane system.
Yeah, that's a really good reminder. So, all right, what is in your fresh tank this week?
Look, we just returned from the Kansas City RV show, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And we were, the Kansas City RV show was a great time. They put on a fantastic show. We were so thrilled to the seminars we gave and all the RVs we got to see. I was really surprised at the mix of RVs this year. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But it was negative temperatures, 5 inches of snow.
More than that was forecast.
But I don't know what it ended up. What it ended up saying.
More than that.
Getting to the show was just hard. I mean, the roads in Kansas City, it's not like a little bit further north where they have a lot more plows and stuff. And also it was too cold for salt to work. So the roads were just covered in snow. They weren't too bad getting there. It was a little bad getting leaving the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, was it? The truck was fine.
It wasn't terrible. We were fine. But it was the kind of thing where there was nobody else on the roads, and that's what made it safe.
Yeah.
If there was other people on the roads, I would have felt more uncomfortable.
Yeah, and that's just because other people on the road and also Kansas City drivers.
Yeah. So they didn't have a ton of people at the show. But the people that were at the show, I was surprised at the number of people that did come out. Yeah. And from what I understand, the people that did come out, there were a lot of buyers.
Yeah.
So that's good.
It was a very active show. Even if it wasn't like a highly attended show because of the storm that came through, it was still a really active show. And, you know, I know for us, it's really great to go to this show and see the progress that's been made since we were there in 2024, because I do feel really strongly, and I think you agree too, that Kansas City is really in a prime position to be a super big RV show for those in the Midwest and in the Northern Plains that can't make it down to Tampa.
There's a reason all your tax returns go there. It's pretty central, right?
But also, I mean, if you think about it, they're in what Bartle Hall, this, you know, expo, that's huge. And this year they were able to open up a whole other section of it, but they've still got one more giant section to go. And Valerie, who is the event coordinator there, is very keen on growing this. And this is something that manufacturer reps get sent to this show.
It's a decent show.
We saw a lot of like some of the new models that premiered at Tampa. They were there at this show as well.
It was bigger than it has been in the past, and it will continue to grow. And the real fresh tank part of this, as of course the people that showed up, the people that we got to see, that was great. But the real fresh tank really for me was, I didn't know that there were multiple RV manufacturers in the Kansas City area.
I didn't either.
I already knew New Horizons. New Horizons is in Junction City, Kansas, which is out by Topeka.
Yeah.
That's not too far, but it's not Kansas City.
Yeah. It's not like a short jaunt over to.
But it's still the area, right? They weren't at the show. New Horizons does, they are big custom fifth wheels and they're really nice. But there were two manufacturers at the show, one called Van Do It. It's all one word, but Van Do It, that makes Class B camper vans. But
do they make vans?
They're very rugged feeling.
Very rugged. Inside.
It's not like they're not designed for like tons of comfort inside. They're designed for your gear and for sleeping and for adventuring.
I'm excited because friend of the show, friend of our life, Grant is actually out at Van Do It today.
Well, there
he went out there this morning.
He basically lives where they
well, yeah, he basically lives there, but we didn't send him.
Yeah.
He like sends me a text.
And he's not even interested in a van.
Oh, he might be now. He's interested in everything, but he sent me a text at like 9 o'clock last night and was like, if you leave by 3 a.m., you could be here in time to go to this tour with me at 9:30. And I was like, just how about you report it for me later.
There's another brand. It's interesting that this other brand is their name seems to be designed in a similar way. They're called Camp in Awe, like Camp Inawe.
But I love that.
But all one word. And they have the coolest.
I love them.
Off-roady type, I guess teardrop type trailers, but teardrop is a misnomer. They're not shaped like teardrops.
No.
But they function like a teardrop. But not, a lot of teardrops, it's just, you just have the bed inside. They've got a little more than that. It's like a bed and a little bit more space, just enough more room where you can like change your clothes and stuff. And you can put some more gear in, great external kitchens. And they're built on the frames are a solid steel beast, like flat steel across the bottom. They are really cool. And I want one so bad.
I can't really put my finger on why I feel this way, but they are the most Kansas City RV to me. And I mean that in the greatest way. Like, I want to fill that little kitchenette with my roastery coffee.
Yeah, your barbecue sauce.
Little barbecue sauce. And I want to take my little camp in awe. And the awnings on these things are so great. They wrap around not only sort of like the side, but then they go like around.
A wing awning.
Yeah, it's like and it goes around. It's so great. It has that scrappy, like in the background, nobody's really paying too much attention to me, but I'm doing some really cool stuff kind of feel to it, which is such a Kansas City thing. I feel that way about the theater there, the dance scene, the music scene, the food scene in Kansas City. It's such an underappreciated. I mean, I feel like the football really sort of overshadows everything else about KC.
They do such a really simple, smart thing that I think other trailer manufacturers could do. Most trailer manufacturers, a standard travel trailer, you've got your propane tanks on the front there in the jack, right? Well, what if instead of putting the propane tanks there, you put them inside cabinets like a fifth wheel has, and then there up front, you put a receiver hitch. And that's what all these little trailers, they've got a receiver hitch up there. So you can put a bike rack there.
They had a great electric bike rack
yeah.
on one of those.
Or you could put a giant gear bin, whatever it might be
yeah.
that you so decide great. To put there, you could put there. And then you can still use that bike rack like on yeah. your truck. So say I go to a campground and I want to bring my electric bikes with me and put it on that bike rack that I've got them. But also when I'm not camping and I want to take my bike somewhere, I just move that bike rack to my truck
yeah.
instead of having to have two of them.
I love that, you know, in the kitchen, the back kitchen area, outside kitchen area, it says, you know, made in Kansas City. I mean, there's so much KC pride. And I think that it was so great to discover them at this show, like to go to a show and that wasn't the Super Show and discover two brands.
Yeah.
Now, I think Van Duit.
They were there last year.
Yeah. And I think Van Duit is a little bit more well-known. There's a, I can't think of her name right now. There's a mom RV content creator that's actually working with them right yeah. now to have a custom build done. I'm so sorry. I'm blanking on her name. But I would love to see Camp in Awe in Florida next year.
Yeah.
I think they would play great. I would love to see them get out west.
Yeah, they do really good. They do really good at some of the overland shows and
yeah.
Portside and at the Seattle show.
Maybe they do. We yeah. don't know. We haven't been to
it. This was their first time at the Kansas City show. Unfortunately for them, this was a show where there wasn't that big of a crowd, but
oh, that snowstorm, there's been zero weather like that the entire season.
It was basically 50 miles an hour with us in four-wheel drive for, you know, 50 miles out of Kansas City.
And then, I would say by the time it was all said and done, there was probably close to a foot of snow.
Yeah.
Down on the ground.
Yeah. And it was just blowing everywhere because it was so cold. It wasn't sticking. Even though the snow had stopped, it was like we're still driving through a big cloud of snow all the time.
But we had a great time.
We did.
Brooks from RV Out West was there and the See America podcast. We all went and had Jen and Grant were there. We all had a great time seeing everything that was at the show. The Sabre 37 RV Miles was there with the Rugged and Loyal. I can't call it a wrap. It's not a wrap.
It's digitally printed. It's actually printed right on the sidewall.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. It's beautiful. It was there. It sold day one. It was already sold by the time we got there on Saturday. So we had a super fun time at the show. And then afterwards, we went and had barbecue at Q39, which was one of the only few places that was actually open. And they were closing early to let everybody get home. So, you know, the weather was a little crazy, but, you know, it's nothing that we haven't all experienced living in this area. So we made it work.
All right. What's in your black tank this week?
So my black tank is, many of you know, I talked about this. I'm doing sort of what I call my analog movement year, right? I'm really trying to get back to less digital, more analog. And so today, as I wrote everything down today, like this was all my list of my four. And then I've been really getting back into stuff like that. And my black tank is how bad my handwriting has gotten over the years because of the lack of using it. And I used to be so proud of how my handwriting looked. Like it was such a thing for me when I was a teenager. I would practice my name, spelling out my name, like how, you know, what way did I want to do the A? Like I love handwriting. I thought it was just the best. My mother has the most gorgeous handwriting. My mother's handwriting is beautiful. Like I ran across when they were with the kids, they played Rummy with them. And just seeing her write out Papa, Nana, Ethan, and Henny, her handwriting is stunning.
Yeah.
My handwriting.
I'm not one to talk. Mine's pretty bad.
This is just chicken scratch.
You have great handwriting. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Dad. And so, it's just another proof that like, there's just things that I think we're losing. You know, not only our attention span, but even my ability to write a check is disappearing. I might order some checks. Who knows? You might be getting a check from me. So that's my black tank. I need to be better at my handwriting. So I'm going to work on that.
All right. What's in your fresh tank?
My fresh tank goes to a coffee shop that I just discovered yesterday. I think I may have found my local coffee shop. So it's called 392 Coffee. They have a few locations here. They have two locations here in the Quad Cities. And one of them is just a half a mile from where we live. I popped in there yesterday. I've been wanting to pop in there for a really long time. I went in. It is completely local. And I didn't realize it, but I happened to the woman who was taking my order happened to be the district manager. And I said to her, "Oh, I've never been in here before." And she said, "Well, you know, if you have any questions." And finally I said, "You know what? I just want a good drip coffee, cup of coffee." I said, I just want some coffee with a little half and half. I said, sometimes I think the best way, I said, I've been trying to find my local coffee shop. And I said, sometimes I think the best way to find a place you like is to just have a cup of coffee. And so she and I started talking. They source everything local or in-house. So they make all of their syrups. If they have any kind of like food or pastry, it is made locally or they do it themselves. All of their coffee is single origin and they tend to do a more lighter roast. So really bright, kind of like citrus forward kind of coffees. They're just awesome. They also had outside, as you came in, a big coat rack that had like boots and some coats and things hanging on it and a sign that said, "If you are in need, please take." And it was just, if you needed a coat because it's so cold or you needed boots on your feet, like you could just take those things. No questions asked.
Nice.
And I thought that that was so great. And so I talked to her for a really long time, and she told me that there is a quad of coffee shops here. And they're like a little community. And they're Starbucks isn't allowed in. Dunn Brothers isn't allowed in. Dunkin' Donuts isn't allowed in. It is for local, like Milltown, Red Barn. So I just thought that was really, really cool. And they're really unassuming, like just sitting there in the corner. They roast all their, you know, they or not, they don't roast. They get all their coffees from Ethiopia. But I just want to give them a little shout out because it's cool to, you know, I love the roastery so much. If I could bottle them up and bring them here, I would. But to be able to find something now in our own hometown that is also got a really similar community forward vibe, I loved. So
nice. That's it for this week's episode of RV Miles Podcast.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, if you're enjoying the RV Miles Podcast and you're watching this on YouTube, we hope that you will like and subscribe to the channel and you will join us for some of the other content we have here. We've got news videos and RV life videos that come out every week, in addition to our Parkography Podcast. If you have been looking for our national park news, that is now over on the Parkography channel, or it's on the Parkography Podcast, wherever you are listening to this podcast. So please come over and join us over there and get caught up on what's happening in your public lands. And on top of that, if you want to talk more to Jason and I, we hope you'll consider becoming a Mile Marker member. We are going live this Monday, February, what is that, the 2nd, I think. And we're going to be live with Mile Marker members. If you want to learn about how you can get a free month of membership, just go over to rvmiles.com/milemarkers and then plan to join us live Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. I think so, right?
Yeah. 9 p.m. 987 Central. 9876.
Yeah, there we go. 9876. We would love to welcome.
Central. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we never know. We just,
no. 8 Central.
Yeah. Rush. 9 Eastern.
8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific.
We are going to be there. Whatever the time is, we will be there. And we hope you will be there as well. rvmiles.com/milemarkers. Please help us keep what we do here going strong. All right, guys, we will see you next week. But until then, please stay safe, stay healthy, and keep logging those RV miles.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.